Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Everyone, I'm your host, Angelina Diana, along with Fran Ginsberg, who's getting her mic put together.
It's being held together by a rubber band.
There you go. Along with Fran and Bob Ginsberg, I'm Angelina, your host. Welcome to Signs of Life radio program, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation. We encourage you during the program. Okay, Fran. Why don't you hold it like a singer?
I might have to.
Okay, we got it. Good. I encourage you to log on to www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org to check out what the foundation's all about, what we're offering, and also to please be interactive with us during our hour-long program. We only have an hour together. So here are a few ways that you can get a hold of us. 631-888-8811. That's 631-888-8811. We also have a computer in the room, which we can access instant messaging. So if you'd like to contact us instantly, you can do that at Signs of Life Radio. That's either through AIM or AOL, Signs of Life Radio. We do have an interesting guest coming up this hour, Dr. Pamela Heath, who has such a wide variety of experience. She is a practicing medical doctor. She also has a specialization in psychology and also in parapsychology. And, of course, if that isn't enough, she's also a psychic, an artist, an author, an investigator of paranormal phenomena. We'll be talking about EVP. We'll be taught electronic voice phenomena. We'll be talking about psychokinetic energy. She's written a book specifically on that. But her latest book, which will be kicking off our interview with her about quarter after or about 18 after or so, is about suicide and how that is looked upon, felt by other mediums in the afterlife. And for those of you who've been, unfortunately, families that have had someone take their life, it's never the answer, as we know, but that they take their lives, you're left with that lingering thought and that feeling, well, is it different for them because they've chosen to cross themselves over? And I think the interesting thing and how this, the Forever Family Foundation, and I think the two of you will agree, has always seemed to, when we need an answer, when we need to have something to help us with that answer, we always have the other side come through and bring something to us. And what has happened is we received a wonderful donation in honor of a young lady who did cross herself over because of peer pressure. And the Christina Calco Project is something that we have now started with the Forever Family Foundation. And we hope what it will provide is for parents, siblings, aunts and uncles, friends who have lost someone that way, answers so that they have a comforting place to go so they know what it is like for that person that is on the other side. And from this medium's point of view, it's no different. We're all, I think, when we cross over, left with that lingering question, and we get the answer of how and why we lived our lives the way that we did here. But we do have Dr. Heath that will be with us, and she has compiled a wonderful collection, right, Bob, of certain stories and channeling from other mediums of their experience of what they've received from the other side of what it's like.
Yeah, you might ask just how do we study or get information about those who have physically died by suicide? And the answer is they're all two ways, and we could study people that have near-death experiences. as a result of an attempt to kill themselves. And there's also we can study messages that have been channeled through mediums, and these spirit entities that have crossed over, took their own lives, channel messages through mediums, and we can listen and study them and form our own opinions. I know we've discussed this before, but many mediums look at those who cross by suicide the same way that they would look at somebody that had a cancer or some similar, disease, that many suicides are victims of depression and other mental illnesses and pressures, and there may not be a difference. That's something we'll investigate a little further later in the show.
Right. So you can give us a call at 631-888-8811. In about 10 minutes or so, we'll be speaking with Dr. Heath on that. And if you would like more information, I know pretty soon we'll have information on the Christina Calco Project at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Being a nonprofit organization, we always appreciate donations. It brings wonderful programs to the public as far as educating the science, the mediumistic aspects, and the researchers out there as far as afterlife or survival of consciousness. One way that we also try to raise money is through bringing interesting mediums to this area. It is in the New York area. Holidays Pass is an event that's coming up on December 16th. Robert Hansen, a very well-known medium, and a very generous medium that's located here on the island, Long Island, New York, I should say, for our national viewers, listeners. And Dr. Lauren Thibodeau, who's out of
New Jersey.
New Jersey, thank you very much, will be joining and helping out the foundation on December 16th for spirit communication from 7 p.m. till 10 p.m. Again, that's on December 16th at the Hilton Hotel on Long Island. If you'd like information on how you can be a part of that event, call 631-425-7707, or you can contact the foundation always through email by logging on to www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org. I think that's one of the goals, right, Fran, of the foundation, which is so neat in how you set up the structure, in that we do have an auxiliary board made up of those that are on the other side. And we do feel guided by them. One such example is the Christina Calco Project, that we get all these questions of, how do we provide answers for parents who have lost a child this way? And then the other side comes through, and we come up with a donation in honor of someone in the other
side.
Right,
and I do also believe that this book that we're going to be talking about tonight also showed up similarly. Once we had sent the word out into the universe that we were going to put this project together.
Yeah, and if you look at the whole website at the foreverfamilyfoundation.org, there's other signs of that. The sign registry is another way that you can get involved with the foundation. Imagine leaving the most precious gift that you can leave to your loved one. Before you pass, you can actually leave a sign at the registry, and then upon your passing, your loved ones could actually access that information after you feel you received a sign. And if they've designated one to you, you can actually get confirmation instantly that they're with you. And on top of that, the other arm of the foundation, which is the scientific part, you'll be contributing to a database of information that will provide overall the bigger scope of things, proving that there's an afterlife. So please check out the Forever Family Foundation, www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org, for more information, the events, the sign registry, and, of course, the Christine Calco Project. Now, getting back to that, Christina, I should say. Now, getting back to that, when you received this, this donation and you put this together, did you receive guidance on that actual project as well, or break down for me how you felt it was important, and once the project is launched, how you feel it will continue to add information or maybe even experiments to help out in this way? What's your goal with the project?
Well, the goal of the project is really keeps it's in line with the goals of the foundation, and we essentially just provide information, and people can use that information any means that they by any means that they want. The fact is that a lot of the information people can find helpful, you know, when they're when they lose a loved one. I mean, our purpose, our goals are not necessarily to provide, you know, any bereavement support. We want to provide scientific information. However, there are many like myself that when I read this information and I think it's credible, it's helpful, you know, in the grieving process, and that's what our hope is. We certainly want to make it clear in our literature and on the website that suicide is not a recommended path to take.
Of course.
However, some of the myths or some of the religious dogma that state that you're going to be damned to a hellish existence seem to be untrue. And
right.
I think that somebody's got to put some information out there that would lead us to form those beliefs.
Exactly. I mean, I can't, and I don't know what it's like to lose a child, but I can't imagine if education or the information that's out there now was left as is, and a parent was searching for an answer, and they were left with that I think very incorrect concept that those that cross from suicide are stuck in hell, purgatory, all those religious connotations. Would be very sad. So I think it's a very important thing that the other side has set up for the foundation to do, is the Christina Calco Project, which, of course, is named in honor of Christina. So please, if you would like more information on this, if you'd like to help out with it, if you'd like to help out financially, we're always open for that as well. So please contact us at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Let me give you the numbers again and how to contact us, because when we come back from the break, we will be speaking with Dr. Heath. The number is 631-888-8811. You can instant message us at Signs of Life Radio. When we come back from the break, we'll be speaking with Dr. Pamela Heath. We'll be talking about suicide and the comforting messages from the other side, as well as electronic voice phenomena and psychokinetic energy on Signs of Life Radio.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back. I'm your host, Angelina Diana, along with Bob and Fran Ginsberg. We're really pleased. Our next guest is not only a practicing medical doctor, but also has a Ph.D. in psychology, specializing in parapsychology. And, of course, if that isn't enough with having that well-rounded educational background in energy, she's also a psychic, an artist, an author, an investigator of paranormal phenomenon. I'd like to now take this opportunity to welcome to the Signs of Life program Dr. Pamela Heath.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. I have to tell you that when Bob, not only is he vice president of the Forever Family Foundation, but he does do a load of reading and wonderful preparation for the show, I was really blown away by the variety of experiences, not only in an educational background, but also in energy that you have. With everything that you do, my first question to you is, how did you find your passion in everything? What is the foundation of your passion with the work that you do?
I think because I look at this lifetime as one of service. So I look for questions that need to be answered that nobody else wants to tackle.
Hmm. Now, I know that you've written a wonderful book, and it does focus on how certain mediums or those that have conversations with those that have crossed over look at suicide. What really happens in the afterlife with suicide? What was your driving force to tackle that question?
Well, I had John Klimo, who's my co-author, mm-hmm. as the head of my dissertation program. And the parapsychology program at Rosebridge. And he often told me when we were sitting in his office about a time when he was assigned to gather together some readings or channeled messages from suicides for someone who was suicidal, because the thought was that if this person knew what she was really getting into, she wouldn't do it, because she'd realize she wouldn't be getting what she wanted out of it. And he gathered about 20 pages or so of material and then kind of forgot about it. And I kept feeling like it really needed to be a book. It just had to be a book. Hmm. And that this was information that could save lives.
Wonderful. When you went about to do this, what span of mediums did you utilize? How did you start to gather that information?
Well, we actually try to get as wide a range of mediums as we can, because anyone who knows anything about channeled messages knows they're very vulnerable to bias. Mm. And so if you can get as many different mediums from different cultures and different eras, then you hope that the truth sort of falls out in terms of what everybody says that's the same, as opposed to what one single person might say about this or that. So I went through about 400 or 500 books of channeled material.
Wow.
And some journals with channeling. And then when we didn't have enough information from that, we did in a few cases ask mediums to channel for us.
Hmm. Now I'm curious, when you requested that specific information, would you find the majority of mediums were able to get someone from the other side, or did you specifically know of someone that had crossed that way and you asked them to contact that particular spirit?
Well, it's interesting, because we did have a spirit, a suicide, who was the husband of a friend of mine's sister, come through on his own.
Oh.
But what we were trying to do, we had lots of information about traditional suicide, and we had a reasonable amount about assisted suicide. But what we couldn't find information on was suicide bombers, because the Muslim religion is kind of anti-channeling. They don't believe in it. They don't like it. They very much frown on the paranormal. And so we had to find a way to get a hold of these folks. And in point of fact, most mediums refused to do it.
You mean if they were of the Muslim faith?
No, most mediums, period, refused to try to contact the suicide bombers. We actually had some trouble finding people willing to do it. I noticed you mentioned Lauren Thibodeau. She is one of the people who helped us out, as is Joanna Carroll and Nevada Shaw and a few others.
Now, I'm curious, just getting back to the mediums that refused. Did they refuse because they felt they couldn't bring a spirit on demand, or was it because of the specific Muslim background?
Neither. It was because they simply didn't want to deal with these folks. They felt like they were negative entities. They didn't want to deal with them.
Hmm.
And in point of fact, the way we approached it, is, which worked very well, as it turned out, was we tried to contact the spirit guides that work with these souls. And most of the time, the initial contact would be with spirit guides. And then those spirit guides would contact the suicide bombers. Hmm. And then with the growing comfort zone with the mediums, and they'd start channeling the actual suicide bombers themselves.
Hi, Dr. Heath. It's Bob Ginsberg. How are you?
I'm fine.
I have a question. There are a lot of messages in the book, delivered channeled messages, and the question I always have is, how does one discern whether the messages are merely coming from the intellect of the medium versus, you know, from spirit entities? Is there any methodology that you use, or is it just from the vast accumulation of accounts that you amassed?
Well, there's no way to know completely for sure. But we tried to approach it in two ways. One way was to try to find a method of confirming this information by looking at past life hypnotherapy regressions and near-death experiences to see if they also found the same thing. So there are a number of suicides who failed to kill themselves but had a near-death experience, and they come back and talk about what that was like.
Right.
So that's kind of a first-hand witness, so that's nice. The other part is we treat it a little bit like we were cops that are trying to find out what happened during a robbery, where you're taking lots of eyewitness accounts and you're looking for common ground. And where somebody says something that is, shall we say, suspiciously off from what everyone else says, we did include it usually, but we would note, you know, we're not sure if this is true or not.
Were the experiences that people had from the near-death experiences from suicide attempts similar to others? Did you do any research regarding the specifics of suicide attempts versus so-called normal
near-death experiences?
Yeah,
PMH Atwater has looked at this question a fair bit. And basically, near-death experiences can run the gamut from good to bad, and that's true for the suicides as it is for people who have near-death experiences for other reasons. So it's not like they're all wonderful or all awful. They are a mixed bag.
We're speaking with Dr. Pamela Heath, author of Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. You can contact us at 631-888-8811 or instant message us at Signs of Life Radio. Dr. Heath, we have a caller on the line. Would you mind taking a question?
I'd love to.
Let's speak to Mary Ann from Huntington. Oh, I guess she got disconnected. Okay. I'm so sorry, but Mary Ann, if you're listening, please try calling again, 631-888-8811. 888-8811. I'm very curious, Doctor, when it came, and I know he asked a question about past life regression, mm-hmm. but when it came to confirming the scientifically the connection to a spirit guide, did you find that you received more validating information because it came from a comforting source for the medium and they were in a comfort zone? Or did you find that without the assistance of a spirit guide, information was just as flowing or as validating?
Well, we weren't looking so much for validation per se, but it is interesting that indirectly I think we did get some validation. In a few cases, mediums came through with, especially with the suicide bombers, with things such as prayers in Arabic or things that were the suicide bombers, you know, would talk about, which to me just sounded crazy. It made no sense at all. Until I read the Islamic Book of the Dead.
Interesting.
And in at least one case, for example, Joanna Carroll phonetically tried to speak out what she was hearing in Arabic, and it was one of the prayers from the Book of the Dead.
Interesting. Now, did these mediums know that they were reaching a suicide bomber, or was it just information?
Yeah.
Okay.
No. No, this was all up front. I would not do that to somebody. That would be unethical to have them.
Well, no. I don't. I maybe you're misunderstanding what I'm saying. I don't think it's unethical to ask a medium to channel someone who they're feeling around them with giving them no information. I think actually, in some respects, by them not having any information, it's more validating. So that's why I was wondering if there was any examples of that you just sat with a medium, they had no information whatsoever, and they came through with validating information.
Yes, the experience I just mentioned about the trying to speak out a prayer in Arabic when she knew no Arabic, and I knew no Arabic, and I had no idea what was a normal prayer that the dead would say.
No, I understand that. I guess I'm trying to go down to a deeper level and
we were not focused on trying to prove or validate individual mediums.
I respect that. I guess someone who's cynical could say that, and if they wanted to break it apart, they could say that, well, you told her it was Arabic. Maybe she knew some Arabic. So I was just wondering if there were some examples.
No, neither of us knew what was coming through. Neither of us discovered it till after the fact.
Okay.
Yeah.
And most of the channeled messages that I read in the book, the general theme was that suicide was definitely not recommended, but that those that did cross from suicide, you know, were not in, you know, eternally damned to a hellish existence. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, that's a very important statement, is they do find peace. They're not damned forever. They're not in a classic hell in terms of hellfire as traditional religions might talk about. But it's not to say they get an easy ride either. They go through all the same stages as other spirits do, but they seem to have more difficulty with their transitions and with their life reviews, perhaps, shall we say, than other souls do.
Hmm. I know that one of the themes in the book is you question how we would live our lives if we knew that karma and survival were real.
Mm-hmm.
How do you envision having this knowledge? How do you think we would change the way we lived if we all knew that we would have to pay for our deeds and that we did survive, at least our consciousness survived?
I really think it would make us more mindful of making very thoughtful choices. Everything we do affects those around us, you know, far more than we realize. And we're responsible for that impact. There's consequences and repercussions. And I think when you look at your dealings with other people that way, you tend to treat them in a kinder, more thoughtful way.
Hmm. Well put.
Yeah, we're speaking with Dr. Pamela Heath, author of Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. We finally have another call, Doctor. If you wouldn't mind taking a caller.
I love calls.
I know. Let's speak to Jean from Stuart, Florida.
Okay.
Hello, Jean, are you there?
Yes.
Jean, you're on the line with Dr. Pamela Heath.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to speak to you, Dr. Heath. My husband passed away 2 years ago from suicide. And I recently attended a conference where I got a very small reading from a very well-known psychic who explained to me that he was on the fifth level into research, and she said that was very good. I did not tell her that he passed from suicide. He was depressed, and he was very ill. I'm wondering if you could give me any insight to the different levels and how he could have progressed so fast. Because my knowledge, like you said in the beginning of the show, was that when you pass from suicide, you either enter right into utero again, and you don't have time over there. But then reading some of George Anderson's book and Debbie Martin's book, realizing that this is not so.
Hmm. Well, different mediums will talk about different numbers of levels. It may be 7, it may be 9. I mean, different mediums have different takes on this. I'm not sure that we can even think of it in terms of discrete levels.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably more like a continuum.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned he was very ill. Did he have a physical illness?
Yes.
Okay. So was this more like assisted suicide?
No. I'm sorry. When you say physical illness, he had an infection in his body, mm-hmm. and he was on two different types of antidepressants, mm-hmm. and he was seeing a psychiatrist and a psychologist. So, mm-hmm. When you said he did have psychological and physical impairment with his body.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that George Anderson and John Edward and some of the other mediums talk about, including some of the older mediums back in the early 1900s, is that there seems to be some difference in how well people make their transitions based on how long their lifespan was expected to be. In other words, we all of us come into life with a certain basic blueprint of approximate things we want to work on and about how long we're going to live and things like that.
Right.
And what they say is if he was getting close to the end of the blueprint, if it was sort of planned that he wouldn't be living much longer anyway for whatever reason, because of his illness perhaps,
right,
then these people tend to have pretty smooth transitions. They don't tend to hang around as long. Also, you have some impact on how well they make a transition. When you pray for them, that helps them.
Mm-hmm.
If you can let go of grief and guilt and anger and everything else that comes along when somebody takes their own life, that helps them.
Oh, I see.
So there may have been things that you also did that assisted his soul.
Hmm.
I see.
Does that answer your question, caller?
Yes. Well, as far as letting go of grief, I think someone always feels the loss of that person.
Yes.
But
yeah.
To be completely non-existent in my mind, that will never happen. He will always be in my mind, and the suicide will always be in my mind.
They don't want you to let go of their love. I mean, they still love you, too. That bond is never ended.
Mm-hmm.
That bond of love is always there.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between remembering them with love or remembering them fondly and trying to deny the fact that they've passed.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible, I know I don't get to speak to many people about this as openly as I am here, but I did see him 5 months after mm-hmm. He passed.
Mm-hmm.
I was in my car, and I was coming up the road,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sorry?
No, I'm just...
She's just agreeing with you.
Oh, it's a little hard to hear you. Okay.
Yeah, these are very common stories, but go on.
And the reason I knew it was him, not only that it looked like him, he was wearing clothes that a normal person wouldn't wear. I was taking some of his clothes out of the closet, and years ago the men used to have those members-only jackets. And I had the picture of him with the sign behind him when he went down to the Keys saying sunny days. And when I was approaching in my car, which I could have gone two different ways, but when I pulled out of the driveway, the last thing that hit my mind was to make a right instead of a left. And I was coming up the street, and there he was with this yellow members-only jacket on and some very brown pants with a baseball cap that he always wore. And he had a little dog, like one of those little Pekingese dogs. And he stood there, and he waved to me with his hand open, which was the way he always waved to me. And when I pulled in front of him, I almost came to a stop, but I didn't stop, and I pulled around the curb, and when I looked in my rearview mirror, there was nobody there.
You must have found that very comforting.
Yes, I have had a lot of signs from him, and I do dream about him a lot. Yes, it was comforting, and yet it was very, very emotional.
Of course.
Yeah, but that's wonderful, because I think he wanted you to know that he's okay.
Yeah.
So, in other words, for him to appear to me like that, then the way I feel about it is the minute he realized what he did after he passed, because this was the type of man he was, he said to himself, okay, I did this. I'm going to go on now.
Yeah,
I don't think he needed any kind of cocooning or time to adjust to the realization that he died tragically, and he went on. And I was just wondering if you think that's possible.
Yes, personality has a strong impact. One of the things that came through here is that we really create our own realities. We do it in everyday life to a certain extent, seeing what we want to see or expect to see, you know, wearing rose-colored glasses or otherwise, you know, filtering what's around us. But the ability to create our own existence is even more true in the afterlife. And if you have someone like that who's willing to look at it in that way, it is really helpful. It really helps them.
Good. Okay, well.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if he does visit you in dreams.
Oh, yes, almost every week.
And comfort you and give you good messages.
Yeah, it feels
nice.
And I think that that's even further validation when you hear it firsthand from someone that, it doesn't really matter really how someone crosses. The fact that they're on the other side, it's comforting, it's peaceful, and that they still want to contact us and bring us through that connection. And and I think personally to materialize themselves like that takes incredible energy and showing how strong the message is that he wanted to get to her. Correct, Doctor?
And that he loves her.
Yes.
And that bond continues.
It was quite amazing to me to think that he could do that after what happened in only 5 months.
He had the right personality, and you don't know what his expected lifespan is. I mean, it's one of those things that we can't say.
Right.
Great. And, Jean, thank you so much for the call.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
We're speaking with Dr. Pamela Heath, who is author of one of her books, is Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. Doctor, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to speak more of the incredible range of work that you're involved in, from EVP to psychokinetic energy. You're listening to the Signs of Life radio program.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Angelina Diana, along with Bob and Fran Ginsberg, and we're speaking with Dr. Pamela Heath, who is very knowledgeable and has written really a very important book called Suicide, What Happens in the Afterlife. Doctor, we have another caller who would like to ask you a question. Is that okay? Doctor, are you there?
Sure.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry, for some reason I couldn't hear you for a moment. Let's speak with Kathy from Glenhead.
Hello? Yes.
Hello, Kathy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, ask your question to Dr. Heath.
Yes, Dr. Heath. I helped facilitate a suicide group on Long Island in Massapequa. And the characteristics of the suicide people are such that they're usually very, very giving people. They would give you the shirt off their back. In fact, I lost my only child, Dawn, to suicide 2 years ago. And one, the reason she died, well, the most apparent reason was her, a friend of hers had killed himself 3 months before, and she couldn't get over his loss. She didn't feel people had the right to go on, and he was dead. And these people are very caring, overly sensitive people. So when I hear psychics or mediums say that suicides are punished because they broke a contract, I feel that that's not the case. And just like the last caller, I've been told by top mediums that my daughter is on a very high level. In fact, I just had a reading the other day by an accredited medium accredited by the Forever Family Foundation. And I was very surprised because she said there was a male figure with her, her father. It's actually her grandfather who was like a father to her. And she has to go down a few levels to speak to him because in the different levels, I'm told over there, you're not allowed to go up, but the other person is allowed to go down. And my father was a terrific man, but my daughter is on a higher level than them. But the real thing I wanted to talk to you about, is it possible, doctor, that a lot of these people are indigo children or people that have really 1 foot here and another foot on the other side most of their lives, because many of them feel different. And I'm told that a lot of them had the potential to have be mediums.
Kathy, thank you for your question. What do you think about that, doctor, as far as do you have any research in any of your books about maybe that they're more developed here and that maybe perhaps they came down here to teach certain lessons and went back, and the only reason why maybe mediums feel they're in a higher level is just because they had a higher purpose to help others move along in their soul group? Do you have any research?
I think there are some souls that do that. That's part of their plan, that they do come to Earth, and committing suicide is actually part of their blueprint. Mm-hmm. Or, in a few cases, is actually something that they see as a way of serving others.
Hmm. Yeah.
In which case, it is going to be handled a bit differently. But there is no one who judges you on the other side. We all judge ourselves. So your caller is correct. There's no real punishment per se, other than the own punishment that we give ourselves, because all of us have experienced, even in our current lives, where we've hurt somebody that we didn't mean to hurt.
Mm.
And it's very painful, and we tend to beat ourselves up over it, and it's hard to let go of that. And they experience that, too, sometimes.
And I think an important point to bring up, too, and maybe you found this in your research, doctor, is that from a medium's point of view, when they say levels, it could be just something that they're sensing,
mm-hmm.
as far as it maybe they had a higher purpose here, or that they chose to only be here for a certain amount of time to get those things done.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that, and Fran says this all the time, and maybe you can maybe give us an example in the book of where you see this, is that as human beings, we tend to want to put it in physical terms, and the other side is so vast that we possibly couldn't explain what we're feeling. So we tend to say levels or indigo children or things like that. In your research, have you found any such examples where you see like mediums use that same term over and over again, but you sense or know knowledge that the medium doesn't know and that it's actually something bigger or greater than that?
Ooh, well,
big question, I know.
Yeah, I guess one of the more interesting terms that I came across was one that came directly from a spirit guide who was talking about unfoldment, and he talked about lineage. And what his meaning was, when you tried to pin him down to what that meant, was something that was almost beyond human comprehension.
Interesting.
So there are certainly cases of that. And I think one of the things that we do talk a little bit about channeling in general and the pitfalls of channeling. And one of the pitfalls of channeling is they're limited by the vocabulary of the channel they're working through.
That's a good point.
Or how much their channels is developed mentally and spiritually in terms of the kind of concepts they can understand.
That's a good point. We're speaking with Dr. Pamela Heath, who is author of Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. You've also authored a book called A PK Zone, A Cross-Cultural Review of Psychokinesis. Again, another totally different topic. And from what I understand from Bob, you nailed it in that book, too, as well. What was your interest or your spark about studying psychokinetic energy?
Well, I actually had been a doctor for many years before I started having psychic experiences. And one of the things I played with for a while before I accepted this is real was healing on myself. And I experimented with different kinds of anomalous healing on myself to see what I could do and was it repeatable. And then, okay, what are the parameters? And so when I went back to grad school to get my doctorate specializing in parapsychology, one of the things I wanted to do was understand why I could do things that science told me were impossible. And part of that involved psychokinesis, mind over matter. And when I was looking at what to do for my dissertation, I understood there had already been lots of wonderful healing studies. I mean, some very awesome studies on AIDS and other things where they use triple-blind technique, and anybody with an open mind would already be pretty convinced that this is something that can happen. But what had never been done is nobody had looked at the experience itself, what it was like for those who did it. And that led to my dissertation, which then led to this book, which was my way of trying to take people through the same process that I went through in trying to understand myself, where I looked first at all the experiences around the world that people had had, and then all the experimental work that had been done, which is over 100 years worth of, much of it controlled, double, and triple blind. And then lastly, what is the experience like for those who do it? And then what do we glean from this? How can we get better at this or learn how to control this? So it was to take you on the same journey, basically, that I took in 4 years of grad school.
So here's the big question. Have you been able to integrate PK in your work as a medical doctor?
Yes, but I'm very sneaky about it. I don't talk about it much. But it's very much a part of my everyday life. And that's, that book is not a book that everybody is going to be interested in, but it's really very helpful. I've gotten emails from all over the world from people who were having problems with poltergeist phenomena, which is basically just uncontrolled human PK. And they found this book, and it helped them understand themselves. It made them feel more normal, and it told them how to get things under control. So it really is a good book for those folks. And if you're just interested in parapsychology and psychokinesis, there really wasn't any other book out there that summarized the literature since 1976. When I was doing my literature review, I was banging my head against the wall. I had to do it from scratch. It was horrible. And I thought, no other grad student should have to do that.
You know, you mentioned before that it's likely that prayer, can help those on the other side. And we know that there's been quite a bit of research showing that prayer or group consciousness can affect, those in the physical. Do you think it's all part of the same phenomenon? In other words, the same mechanism that allows us to heal is the same phenomenon that allows us to communicate with the discarnate souls?
I think it's certainly very similar. It's actually very hard to separate PK from ESP.
Right.
And more parapsychologists are starting to believe they may be just one thing, that we're artificially separating as if they were two different things. But certainly people from the other side tell us that they see prayer as actual colored energy, and it has a major impact there. Now, of course, the afterlife doesn't have physical matter, so technically you can't call it psychokinesis since that's mind over matter. But in essence, I think it is really the same thing. You're talking about energy that is focused, controlled, directed by consciousness, and it's energy that has an impact.
So do you think that there's actually a signal that's sent from a sender to a receiver? Or I know we had Dean Radin on the show, and he talked about possibly being entanglement. What's your feeling?
I think you may be right. I think if we're all one, we're all interconnected, And it's the same as if you change yourself, you can affect everybody around you.
Correct, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a similar kind of a phenomenon. It may well be entanglement. They may be on the right track there. But again, it may also be something that's sort of beyond our ability to comprehend at this point.
Mm. Wonder if we're going to find the answer.
Maybe when we get to the other side.
There we go.
For sure.
Now, I'm wondering if we have a telepathic connection here, and we really, really work hard on creating and working on telepathy, say, like between my husband and I, if that will or can be proven that that will increase my ability to reach him better if, God forbid, he happens to cross over first. Would they, in fact, then be the same energy? You know, if we're connecting, like if I'm sitting here with Fran and I send in my head as we're having lunch, order the broccoli, and all of a sudden she orders the broccoli, and I have that ability to be a good sender and she's a good receiver, and let's say, God forbid, Fran happens to cross over first, would I therefore be able to, since I've worked on that telepathic muscle, would I be able to reach her better on the other side? What do you think of that concept?
I think it has to do more with connection. And so you're looking at what would be called the third variable, where you have something that's not directly an influence. So let me see if I can put this in words. ESP is improved by feeling deeply connected to somebody, by feeling like you're merged with them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, that feeling of connection and merger is also going to facilitate communication in the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not really the ESP telepathy that's making the difference. It's the feeling connected with somebody else. And where we see people coming back and communicating from the afterlife is where there were these bonds of love,
mm-hmm.
or where there is a need, where they care about us and they're trying to get a message through. So you'll often see suicides come back and try to reach people who are suicidal to tell them don't do it,
right.
Even if they weren't close in physical life.
So conversely, if I really wanted to reach my husband better on a telepathic level, I should feel more connected to him.
Yes.
So when I'm angry with him, it's not a good time to send him a message.
Well, you make it true, because the thing you have to recognize, if you're going to talk about PK, which appears to overlap a lot with ESP.
Correct.
It's that some of the factors involved include emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're feeling a strong emotion, whether it be anger or love, that tends to get through more.
Okay. Well, very interesting.
If you're feeling energized, that makes a difference. If you're feeling deeply connected, if you're feeling one with somebody, that makes a difference. So you see, all these different things can have an effect. I pulled out something like 14, 15 different factors that all influence how well people can do these things.
So to be a better sender, is it a fair statement to say if I wanted to send information, my vibration would have to be higher, but to receive, would my vibration have to be lower so that I can receive the information?
No, I think that's sort of an artificial distinction.
Okay.
Every, the psychics I spoke to said that it was all really the same.
Okay.
It all involved active energy.
Okay. That's a fair statement, because some would argue, and it's just an argument, that if you're in a meditative state, like when I do mediumship, when my energy is relaxed, I receive information from the other side, but when I want to ask them a question, I have to rev my energy up, it seems. So I have this constant feeling of my vibrational energy
going up and down.
Going up and down.
Some of that may be belief system.
Okay.
What we saw is that when you believe something is true, it becomes true for you.
Interesting. Okay.
Now, in terms of receiving, though, I would have to agree, all of us can get psychic messages. Everybody is psychic.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is psychic.
Right.
And we can all get messages from those who have passed, loved ones who have passed on.
Correct.
But we have to listen for those messages. And so for most of us, you're going to have a moment that you can quiet your mind and open up and listen.
And that's what I feel is lowering your vibration. That's my belief system.
For me, what it is they touch me on the neck. I'll feel them touching me on the neck, and it's like it's a signal to tune in.
Wow.
They have something they want to say to me. But I don't change my energy. I don't go up and down.
Interesting.
Whether I'm sending or receiving. I'm in the same altered state, and I just have that signal that tells me, oh, it's okay. It's time to slide into that state where you can send and receive.
Yeah, I go to like a zone too. It's almost like I'm daydreaming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's part of why I called that book the PK Zone.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah. Wow, well, this has been an informative hour. Dr. Heath, I want to thank you so much
for joining us. If you would like information on your books, where could our listeners go?
You could go to my website at www.PamelaHeath.com.
Wonderful, and thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciated your time, your energy, and your work. Thank you so much.
It was my pleasure.
Have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
That was fantastic. It was really very informative.
Excellent.
And what a wide variety of studies she has had, and how cool is it that she's a medical doctor?
Well, do you see, this is the conversation we always have. We're always afraid when somebody has so much stuff, so much experience under their belt that they're too spread out. But mm-hmm. she just seemed to have everything so researched, so in place.
And what a good fit for the foundation in that she's scientific. And she's a psychic.
We didn't even mention that she's an accomplished artist. So you know, one of the things
really?
That if we get to talk to her again, maybe she gets that helps her intuitiveness, helps her, you know.
Well, I have to tell you that, and I've said this before, that most psychic mediums seem to be very artistic. They can sing, they can dance, they can draw. So it seems to be a very common trait, I think, of those that seem to be drawn to.
Except that
world.
Trait normally would not get you through medical school.
Correct. So that's what's so interesting about her.
I would imagine that she is one of those rare individuals that is completely in balance, that there's not one strong side of the brain over the other.
Or maybe she's not balanced and it allows her to do both, because we tend to put things so physically that we either have to be the person that's the doctor, the lawyer, the Indian chief, or we have to be the struggling artist. And that's kind of like, I think, a social way that people tend to look at the physical world.
Mm.
And the fact that she breaks that barrier is maybe she doesn't look at the physical world so simplistically. She just goes with her gut and her...
Or as she says, beyond human comprehension.
There we go. Well, this has certainly been an informative hour. Well, that music is our cue to tell us that our time is up. We want to thank you for joining us. Please join us next week for another show, Signs of Life Radio. And I do want to remind you that the other side is just a heartbeat away, and science is going to prove it. Thank you for joining us.